The next thing I'd like to have you all do is, could all of you, the women put their purses over here, who brought purses, just kind of put them down here, and then go back to your spaces on the wall. Now they're in plain sight and they'll be fine, okay? Could I have the same for men and their wallets? Could you brought your wallet, just kind of put it over there? No wallets? No wallets. Yeah, there it is. All right. I need watches now. Oh. Watches. Okay, now what I want you to do now is think about a deep, dark secret that you have, a secret that you really don't want anybody to know about, a secret that you haven't shared with anybody, but that you know you have, and every now and then it kind of creeps into your consciousness. Can we just kind of think about what that secret would be, that if it got out, we would just really feel awful if somebody really knew this secret about us? So I just want to give you all a couple of minutes to think about what that secret is.
Is it just as good as hardly anybody knows?
Well, it could be one that hardly, but if people knew, if it became public knowledge, that you would really, really be kind of embarrassed. You don't want anybody to know. Especially don't want your parents to know what it is. So whatever that secret is, you don't want your parents to know what it is. Do we all know what that secret is?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now, why don't we just imagine that you've come in for help and I've asked you to tell me what that secret is. Just imagine what that would be like. You've come in to help, you've got this deep, dark secret, and I'm here to help you. You've been standing outside for about 15 minutes, because it's not 8:30 yet. I don't go to work until 8:30. And I've been just kind of sitting here sipping my coffee, and you've been thinking about this deep, dark secret that I want to know, and I want to know in 50 minutes, because that's all the time I've got to give you. Okay? Now, why don't we just imagine that Margaret told me her secret. I'm going to tell it to Chrissy. Chrissy, you want to know what Margaret's secret was? It was that. Okay? And now, why don't I just have everybody sit down, but let me help you to sit down. Should you come with me, please? Would you sit back here? No, the back too close. Now, is there anybody here who feels uncomfortable and where I place them, raise your hand. Feel uncomfortable? You do?
Standing.
You feel comfortable standing? Yeah. So do you feel okay? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, why don't you stand? No, you don't get to sit. No. Anybody else feel uncomfortable?
Oh, yeah.
Anybody feel okay with where they're at?
It's a little snug.
Well, you know what? It is a
misunderstanding.
Why don't you guys take your valuables back and take your seat? What I've just done, for those of you who don't know me, and this is the first session that you've done with me, is an experiential exercise. And I used to be a trainer for the United Way of Chicago, and so all of the sessions that I prepared here are drawing from that experience as a trainer, where I did training for nonprofit organizations on different organizational development kind of issues. And the reason that we do experiential exercises is we believe that people will tend to remember the emotion that they feel if we take them through an exercise, and that they can then use that emotion that they have to analyze whatever issue it is that we have. So, in training we have kind of this saying, tell me and I will listen, teach me and I will understand, show me and I will learn. And so what I'm going to try to do is show you what it's like to be a poor person, to have to come in and to ask for help. So we've gone through this exercise, and does anybody want to tell me how you felt being asked to stand up against the wall? Did that bother you?
I felt very unimportant to you. You were very pleasant, but I didn't feel like, if I'd been more important to you, you would have offered me a chair.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I knew I had automatically had something in common with these people.
With the folks up against the wall with you, so you had a bond with the other folks. Was it kind of you against me, them against me?
Well, you were more important than I was.
Yes. Okay.
You were better than me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other feelings?
A little uncertain about what was going to happen. Yeah.
And that's a real emotion about if you're standing up against a wall and somebody's in power and you don't have the power, then how do you feel and what's going to happen to you, and do you even risk being there? Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I felt like I was back in the service.
Being told what to do?
And not knowing what the next one was going to be. Could be, get on that plane, go to Vietnam, stay where you are. You have no control.
Impersonal?
I felt like I had sort of done something wrong. I was thinking, up against the wall from, I guess it was more of a, cops asking you to go stand up against the wall, put your hands up, and I felt like that was the next step or something. I felt sort of uncomfortable, like you thought I had, or not that I had done something wrong, but I really wasn't sure what it was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I saw some people go like this when I said, could you stand up against the wall? Was that kind of the feeling?
Mm-hmm. You were being accused of something.
Mm-hmm. How about when I asked for your valuables? Your purses.
The question, why? Yeah.
It's interesting that nobody asked me why.
We were into the game of it.
No one said, I'm not giving you my purse. I'm not standing up against the wall.
Well, I think that's only because we knew that the whole thing was just an exercise, and essentially we were in a trusting community. But if we hadn't been here at Holden Village in a random group of people, you better believe we'd been wondering about it.
Would you have given it up?
I might have kept my money in my wallet in my pocket.
You
can have my purse and I'll keep my wallet.
So you would have played part of the game.
Yeah. I don't know.
But you would have.
I would have.
You wouldn't have gone along totally.
Depending on who was asking me to give them my purse.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if I saw other people doing it, putting their watches down, I might have thought that I had to, because in order to get whatever it was I came here for, I might have to do that. And if I didn't do it, I might have to leave or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I probably would have done that.
Yes.
I don't know if this is relating to your purpose or not, but I'm 23 years old. I've been wearing a watch every day since I've been 12. And when I take it off, I go nuts. I sleep, I shower, I never take it off.
So you feel real uncomfortable.
Yeah, real uncomfortable.
You gave it up very easily, though.
Well, exactly, because it was in the in Holden community. If mm-hmm. it had been outside, I said, hey, no way. You know, mm-hmm. you're not going to take it. What's the point? You know, you're going to have it darn.
Yes.
Well, I wear my father's watch, and when I took it off, I noticed while we were talking, I kept feeling my wrist. Mm-hmm. Something had been taken away from me.
Yeah, me too. I was holding my wrist, mm-hmm. actually.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if rings would be next and how I feel about leaving my wedding
yeah,
ring.
The first time I did this, I did ask for rings. And first of all, people do have wedding rings, and I certainly don't want to be responsible if somebody loses their wedding ring. That's why I didn't ask for it. And the other reason is I'll never forget a student said to me, and we had them take everything off, their earrings, their rings, their wallets, and everything, and he said, yeah, you might pretend you're a nice guy. Now, I'm not buying it until I get my stuff back. I don't want to hear anything you got to say. So I decided not to go that far this time.
Yes.
I didn't have anything to put down. And it was kind of weird because I was, in some ways, I felt like, well, good, I don't have anything to give up. But I also felt like, I don't even have anything to give up, so here I am standing against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real, I mean, it's like, well, I wonder, comparison thing.
Mm-hmm. How about the seating? Did that bother anybody?
Yeah.
What bothered you about it?
Being shoved in the person's face or something.
Being shoved
in I mean, it was okay because we sort of knew each other and I figured, okay, this is Holden Village and I'm more, you can be more comfortable around people. But normally I get sort of edgy about complete strangers coming up and just sort of invading my space.
Yeah,
yeah,
people
yeah,
have with their space here and people's space there. You don't like people that close to you.
Mm-hmm. How many people were really comfortable and didn't want to say anything because they didn't want to be moved?
Get up and move.
And so, even though it might not have been comfortable at first, didn't it get a little bit more comfortable when you saw how everybody else was being pushed around?
It wasn't comfortable from the get-go. I just wanted to sit down because my legs are tired. And you wouldn't let me. And then when you introduced the option of squatting, that's when I decided I'm not going to say a thing. That would be much worse.
Well, the goal of my talk today is really to talk about what I really want to do is challenge us to look at the stereotypes that we have about people when they come looking for help, especially poor people when they come looking for help. And the reason I want to do this is because we live in a society that's very classist. And just like in a racist society, we get some very subtle messages about the worth of people. And somehow, in a society where you have haves and have-nots, the haves always, for some reason, tend to really kind of get it in their mind that they're better, that there's something about them that's better than the people who don't have. And that somehow or another, the people who don't have something are in some way deficient. And now when I say that to people, they always kind of look at me like, no, that's not true. I don't think that. I really don't. So why don't we just look at an example then? And why don't we contrast two government programs that we have? I hope that everybody will be familiar with it. And one is, let's say, welfare. Why don't we take a quick look at welfare? What do you think about when you think about a person on welfare? What's your stereotype of a person on welfare? Who wants to?
Single parent?
Doesn't have a job?
Why doesn't he have a job?
She.
Or she?
Yeah, she.
Okay, why doesn't she
all
have a job?
Reasons.
What reasons? Common reasons. First ones to come in your mouth.
Lack of education.
Physical condition. Mm-hmm.
Children.
Laziness.
All right. What color is this person?
Black.
White.
White.
Hispanic. Okay, Asian, all right.
But I thought of like a younger.
Younger? Younger person? Mm-hmm. How young?
20s,
30s. 20s, childbearing years?
Yes.
Okay.
Teenage mother.
Teenage mother, okay. These are all the stereotypes that we kind of hold about people on welfare. How about Social Security? What do we think about people on Social Security? Give me the person that you think about when you think about somebody on Social Security.
Retired
white.
Widow.
Widow.
Physically disabled.
Mentally disabled. Okay, so on one side we've got somebody on welfare, which is a government program, who is a young in her childbearing years, probably woman of color, with children, single parent, uneducated, unemployed. And on the other hand, we have an elderly white female, widowed. And what are these images? And the reason I want to get to it, what I really want to get to is the image. The image is that one is deficient and that one is deserving. So that one is deserving of help and one is not deserving of help. And we see this all along in everyday lives, advertisement, media, and even in the terms that they use. What do we call people who get welfare? Recipients. What do we call people who get Social Security? That's right, absolutely. So that one is an insurance system and where you're an heir, and one kind of implies that you are a deficient person in some way who needs therapy or treatment or help. And there are also a number of other programs that people get on a regular basis, but they don't consider those to be welfare of any kind. You all, can you think of any?
Farm
subsidy, food stamps.
Veterans benefits.
I'm sorry?
Veterans
benefits.
WIC.
Mm-hmm. Any others? I do this a lot with students, and students are real kind of critical, especially when I'm dealing with students who are from privileged white backgrounds, very critical of people who are on welfare and who are in poverty, and the privilege and power that says, you know, they could do better if they wanted to do better, they aren't really trying kind of thing. Yes, but they don't see that as financial assistance, financial aid. They don't see that as welfare because they deserve to get that money. They're the best and the brightest, you know. Although, it's real interesting that there are some financial aid students, when you take a financial aid student and put them with a student who doesn't get financial aid, that same kind of prejudice comes out. Mm-hmm. For example, one guy told me one time that he didn't feel that one guy that he knew should have received financial aid. And I said, can you tell me why not? And he said, because I saw him in the bookstore buying film. And do you know how much film costs? And if he has a camera and all this other stuff and is buying film, then he doesn't need financial aid. So it just really becomes the issue of who has and who doesn't, and the stigma that's placed on some who have and some who get. I just really wanted to do kind of a short exercise and lecture with you guys tonight, because I think it's important that we really examine this issue of being stigmatized when we come to get help, especially when we're dealing out of the churches or institutions where we feel that we are being humane. And I hope that by doing this exercise, what I can do is put you in touch with an emotion and leave you with a feeling, so that when you plan your programs or when you're sitting across that table supposedly giving help to somebody, you will remember what it feels like to have to come in and ask for that help. You will remember what it feels like to be the person standing, to be the person waiting, to be the person treated with disrespect, even though you may be well-intentioned, even though you may be pleasant about the way that you do it. So that's what I'm really trying to do. That's what the exercise was really about. And I always kind of leave people with a thought. And so what I would like to leave you with tonight is that we must be prepared to understand the way in which we live. And we must examine things that influence our values if we are to function in a humane way. And so that's what I'm trying to get you guys to do, to really look at those people that you feel are deserving of assistance and look at those folks that you think are undeserving of assistance and to see what are the things that make them common so that they can get some humane treatment when they seek it from whatever agencies that you're involved with. Do we have any discussion? Want to open it up for discussion? Okay. Well, I thank you for coming then.